This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. More than half of teenage drivers will be involved in an accident within a year of getting their license. That's 3 million crashes. On the program today, we'll look at what we can do to make our teens better drivers, and as a result, we might just become better drivers, too. You know, I suspect, like everyone else, I think I'm a pretty good driver. But apparently I could use a review of the rules of the road. Yesterday online, I took a test on the rules. I passed, but I got a couple wrong. You might try it, too. I'll put the words Illinois Driver Education into your browser, and you can take the test online and see how good you are, where you need to brush up. Well, two guests join us this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. With me in the studio is Sergeant Bill Emery. He's a safety education officer with the Illinois State Police. And joining us by telephone, Timothy Smith, the author of Crash Proof Your Kids, Make Your Teen a Safer, Smarter Driver. He's also a certified driving instructor and a race driver licensed by the Sports Car Club of America. Listeners, you can join the discussion with a telephone call. I look forward to your questions and comments. Maybe you have a tip to share about teaching someone to drive, or a tip to share for parents or other adults who are doing the teaching. Here are the phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free. Anywhere else outside the Champaign-Urbana area, if it'd be a long-distance call, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Sergeant Emery, Mr. Smith, welcome. Thank you so much to the two of you for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Celeste.
Sure.
Good afternoon.
Well, the first question I have this afternoon is for Timothy Smith. It has to do with that word that I used in my introduction, accident. You don't use it. You use the word crash. Why?
Well, it's a good point. I didn't use the word accident anywhere in my book for the simple reason that there are very few accidents out there. Well over 80, maybe 90% of car crashes are crashes, not accidents. I call it when a meteor falls on your car, that's an accident. Otherwise, somebody's at fault, which makes them preventable.
Okay. And the leading cause of death for teenagers, this is such a sobering thought, is car crashes. Sergeant, can you give us some sense of what causes the most serious crashes among young drivers? What happens?
Well, what usually happens is, due to inexperience, a teenager driving, they haven't experienced road conditions. They haven't experienced all the things that we have in our long driving experiences. Also, there's other distractions that they have. They're invincible. They're going to live forever. Mm-hmm. And they are more risk takers. So those are the leading causes of crashes. And I have to agree with Mr. Smith that we no longer call our accident reports. They are now called crash reports because, as you said, someone is usually at fault.
Hmm. Is 16 too young to have a driver's license? This is a question for both of you. Mr. Smith, you want to take a shot at that first?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the facts show that when people start later, as they do in other countries, crash rates go down. Their brains are further developed. They tend to be a bit more responsible. So clearly, we would lose fewer teenagers if we raise the driving age. Having said that, I don't think that's going to happen in this country anytime soon. And there are some people who are ready to drive at 15 or 16, and some people who, frankly, aren't ready at 18.
Yeah, or 25, frankly.
Right.
I'd have to agree, too. The maturity level of each individual is different. And as Mr. Smith said, 25-year-olds may not be able to drive responsibly.
Yeah. Now, in the book, Crash Proof Your Kids, there's this very wonderful statement that is a really good reminder. No child under 18 in this country can obtain a learner's permit or a driver's license without a parent or a legal guardian's written consent. So what should we take into account before giving that consent? Tim Smith?
I think it's just the issue of parents assuming full responsibility for this. It's a privilege, not a right, for our kids to get a permit and a license, and it's, in my opinion, a parent's responsibility to decide on each child's behalf, are they ready? How much time is it going to take before I'm comfortable with them behind the wheel? Should I delay the onset of their driving for good reasons? And pull the teenager in with you in those decisions, because it's such a big step, such a potentially dangerous step. But the biggest thing is, don't outsource it. Don't figure that they've gone through driver's ed, which gives them minimal behind-the-wheel experience. It's really all of our jobs as parents to make that decision, because it's the single most dangerous thing most of our kids will ever do.
Mm. What do you mean? Talk with us a little bit more about how you pull in the teenager into this process, and maybe the sergeant can follow up then, too.
Well, I think you have to sit down as your teen reaches driving age and say, look, I want you to achieve the same thing you do, the car keys, that sense of autonomy, but we're going to do it on terms that I'm comfortable with. I'll set the rules. I'll get your input. I'm going to contribute time and effort. You're going to contribute time and effort. But there's going to be some things we agree on. There's some rewards and penalties and expected behaviors for the responsible use of a car and for infractions of irresponsible use. And we're going to make this a, in your eyes, perhaps, relatively lengthy process, because you're not going to be ready, in my opinion, when you get out of driver's ed to be a safe, smart driver on the road. You're just beginning. We're going to do it together. So if you take it seriously and draw your teen in from the beginning, they may not like it so much, but they'll at least get it that you're taking it seriously, and so should they.
Yeah, but I can hear the kid saying, Dad.
Be strong. It's our job.
That's right. Okay.
I have to agree. Many parents, number one, are not aware that they can at any time before the age of 18 pull their child's license. They're not aware of it. And when I do presentations and I tell them this, you see eyes widen and people saying, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Because my daughter, my son, you know, they've been involved in a lot of crashes and my insurance keeps going up. And when I tell them that, it's like, okay, now I can take responsibility. And what a lot of parents also do is they went to school to take responsibility for teaching their children manners, everything, and also teaching them how to drive, which, once again, it's a very limited time that they're actually behind the wheel. Very limited. It's responsibility of the parents to add more. In fact, when I read the book yesterday, I was thinking to myself, oh, my goodness, yeah, that is great stuff. That's really good stuff. And Illinois has also increased the time that students are to be learning with their parents from 25 up to 50 hours now. And I think that's the greatest addition to the law that has come out.
Yeah, and at least 10 of those hours are to be at night, nighttime driving.
A lot of us don't even think about night. If you can drive during the day, you can drive at night. But those are two different types of driving situations.
Yeah. Tim Smith, what do you think about this change in Illinois' law?
I agree with Sergeant Emery. I think it's a very positive step. In my opinion, 50 hours over about a six-month period is the bare minimum that's necessary. And coincidentally, and fortunately, I guess, in my book I outline a crash-proof plan that pretty much is a step-by-step 50-hour-plus plan for parents to make good use of that time. Because I think the point is, you're mandated to spend that time. You should do at least that amount. So make that time count. Do the exercises in increasingly complex order. Make sure, as Sergeant Emery mentioned, you get some night driving, ideally driving in different weather conditions. You teach them to emergency brake, which they don't get in driver's ed. You teach them how to be a defensive driver mentally, and you can make a huge difference in your kids' safety that way.
Mm. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and today on the program, we're talking about what we can do to make our teens better drivers. We have two guests with us this afternoon. Timothy Smith is joining us on the telephone this afternoon. He's the author of Crash Proof, Your Kids Make Your Teen a Safer, Smarter Driver. With me in the studio, Sergeant Bill Emery. He's a safety education officer with the Illinois State Police. Questions, comments are invited this afternoon, 333-9455. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with a listener on line one in Urbana. Hi.
Hello. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm really pleased to see that there is a racing driver who's written a book about teaching teens to be crash-proof. I'm thinking, isn't this a great opportunity for, say, your local sports car club to maybe encourage kids to do autocrossing or having their parents engage in some form of performance driving so that the student driver can learn how to handle the car when it's at its limits?
I'll take that, and then Sergeant Emery, you can add on if you want. I think that's potentially a double-edged sword. The light bulb went off in my head as I was being trained as a race car driver, that there were some things I was learning, visual scanning, emergency braking, vehicle control, that could be translated to people in everyday driving situations. And for some drivers, and I would recommend that they be a good 18, there are a number of driving schools, I've had my daughter go through one, that practice skid control and get you to feel in a safe situation a car at its edge. I personally believe for the right teen, that can be valuable once they've got experience under their belt. For the wrong teen, and by that I mean a testosterone, turbocharged teenage boy, it can make them feel even more bulletproof. So if I were a parent, I would be cautious about the racing element, because part of what you want to do to keep your kids crash-proof is manage that need for speed. So it can be a bit of a double-edged sword. You've got the car control skills, but you can also make a naturally risky teen even riskier sometimes.
When you were talking about this, bells were going off in my head. I'm thinking also, when we talk about race car drivers, we're talking about primarily what you see on TV, speed, the faster, quicker. And as Mr. Smith was saying, there are some young people who are mature enough to do it. And again, 18 would be the bare minimum age that I would even introduce them to this. We need to get the basics down, scanning, following distance, control of the vehicle itself, being aware of hazards, knowing those hazards, being able to communicate those hazards before they happen. Those are the most important. And as the teen gets older and more mature, sure, there's no question about it. But again, those bells were going off my head when I first heard that. But again, it depends on the maturity of the child.
Yeah. Caller?
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. Also, you know, it strikes me that also we're learning more about the brain, and we know now that it's still developing throughout adolescence. So the stuff that you have inside might not be, pun intended, up to speed, you know? So it might be a thing for a little bit older young driver.
Right.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener again in Urbana, line two. Hi.
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 Just an observation and then kind of a question. The observation is when I was 16, I'd only had my license probably 3 or 4 months, and my dad sent me down to St. Louis to pick up a piece of equipment for his office, and I was driving the family station wagon, a big old Chevy. And down on the riverfront, I got into an accident with an older lady. I still don't know. You know, they never determined who was at fault. One of us ran the light, and nobody was really hurt. But since then, I've never had a car-to-car accident. And I just always felt like that just scared the heck out of me so much. Plus, it made me aware of, you know, other cars that it kind of gave me a good foundation. I'm not recommending it for other drivers.
Hmm. Okay, well, thanks for the story.
And the other one is that I just had a question for the officer, is that when the first snowfall of the year, it kind of drives my wife nuts, but I'll find an empty parking lot and then go out in the parking lot and just kind of do some donuts and put on my brakes and things, just to kind of get the feel again, since it's the first, you know, it's been, what, 6 months since we've had a snowfall, the feel of driving on snow again. And I just wondered what he thought of that.
Well, when it comes to any type of driving, especially inclement weather, during the first snow, it appears that people every year forget how to drive on that first snow. So if you have a chance to go into a parking lot and it's okay with the management of the parking lot, go ahead and practice. Now, I'm not recommending doing donuts, because that's what we're trying to prevent. But the emergency stopping, those are all important things. And if you have younger people, teaching them to, as they approach that intersection, be starting to reduce your speed, taking your foot off the accelerator, covering the brake itself. What has happened to you with your first crash, and probably the reason why now you haven't been involved in a crash, is now you're anticipating. And that's what we want people, what if situation. As you come up to that intersection, just because you have the green light doesn't mean that you have the right of way, that the person that has a red light is going to stop. So you're already scanning, looking, and you know what could happen. And not only at stop signs, but all intersections. So I commend you on that. But yeah, there's no problem in practicing the skids, how to avoid being involved in a skid itself, because those are all things that can be avoided, except in those extreme situations where there's extreme ice on the roadway itself or black ice. But we all know that when the temperature is under 32 degrees, there is that possibility. So just being aware is number one.
Timothy Smith, anything to add?
No, I agree with Sergeant Emery. And in a controlled environment, I think it's important for kids to have that too, as part of their learning, that first snow, that first ice, get them out in a big empty parking lot and have them understand how much further a car goes when the traction is reduced. And what happens when you overcorrect, when that back end starts to lose itself? It's much easier to have somebody experience it than, say, something like steer in the opposite direction. So I think it's important for them to understand how quickly you can lose control of a car in slippery situations. So I agree.
Yeah. Now, Timothy Smith, you've divided your crash proof program into four stages or gears. And maybe this would be a good time to bring this up, because I'm thinking now, when I was a kid, I went first to the classroom, the high school classroom. Then we had a simulator. Then we went out with the football coach. He was our driving instructor in the car. And then I got my permit and started driving with Mom. And Mom, bless her heart, she was very patient. She was very good. But she started me out right from, you know, she said, okay, let's get in the car, back the car out of the driveway. I'd never done it before.
Right.
So eventually I said, Mom, could you just drive us to the parking lot and then I'll take over and see what it feels like? It was just too much. So talk about, you know, where to begin with kids. What's first gear and where do we end up when we're through fourth?
Well, the reason it's set up that way is just basic learning theory, and that is we learn complex things in stages, and you've got to let people assimilate the less complex things before the more complex things. The kids see us drive and multitask, and they think that's pretty natural. Well, it's natural if you spend decades doing it, but it takes all of their concentration just to operate a car when they're beginning. So first of all, get rid of all distractions, food, radio, iPods, cell phones. Start in a parking lot. Start in your driveway. And when you get comfortable and they get comfortable with handling the car and basic maneuverability, then move into the next level. And that would be not busy residential streets, for instance. And then work your way through those gears, as I call it, into country roads, freeways, and then finally busy urban streets where the distractions and the need to process information is the greatest. But only take the next step when you're comfortable with the piece before you. I hear of parents who take kids on the freeway immediately. It freaks them out because they're not used to that speed, sharing the road. So do it in an orderly fashion. Move on when you're both ready.
Yeah. And at the end of this program, what are some of the things on the accomplishment list? Where should we be with the kids?
I think the first thing is for parents to make a serious commitment that this is worth their time and effort. All the time and money we spend shuttling our kids around to athletics and academics and all that, this investment, whether you do 50 or 100, is so important. Have a plan in place. Make it in writing what your expectations are jointly with your child. And, you know, after that, they're going to drive the way they drive. Your responsibility is in that very first critical year to do everything you can to minimize their risk. So that's what I would want, I think, parents to walk away from this, knowing that they can make an impact. Driver's ed is only the first step, and we're protecting our most precious asset.
Mm. How could our driving ed courses be more effective, be better?
How could it be more effective?
Yeah.
If they completely flipped around the ratio they have now. Kids get 3 to 6 hours behind the wheel and about 30 hours of classroom time. My opinion, it ought to be flipped. Give them 30 hours of behind the wheel, 6 hours of class, and they'll be much better drivers. It's seat time they need.
Yeah. Sergeant?
I agree 100%. When asking students, you know, what do you remember in driver's ed? I don't remember anything. I slept or I didn't pay attention. The driver's ed instructor really didn't want to teach the class. So what did you remember? I remember behind the wheel, driving. That was a lot of fun. So, again, like Mr. Smith said, just switch those over. Demonstration, hands-on, is so much better for most individuals.
Yeah. The for-profit schools that are out there, if you're going to select one of these to help a young person learn to drive, what should we look for? You know, what does a good program look like? Timothy Smith?
I wish I had something that would help people differentiate them. Unfortunately, in my experience, there's not a whole lot of difference. And I say that knowing that there are schools and instructors that are better than others. But here's the conundrum. They are all under the same formula. They are cranking out kids who, in about a six-week period, can pass the written test and the driving test, which is pretty much a joke. So very few of them, and check out their curriculums, have any real focus on advanced driving techniques, on defensive driving. They simply don't have enough time. So I'm not sure that there's great criteria for differentiating basic driver's ed. I would look at that as a necessary step to get the stamp from the state and then get yourself involved.
I agree. You need a... They're just more or less the basics. You get the information that you need to pass the test. They do the very basic. It all falls back on someone, if it's not your parent, a responsible person over the age of 21 that has some experience under their belt to be able to teach that individual. And the older the person with the more responsibility, the more driving experience, don't get someone who drives maybe 30 years of age. Like, for instance, my sister, who was almost 40, and she never did any driving. I wouldn't expect her to be able to teach someone to drive without experience.
And also, I think this raises an interesting point as well. I think that, you know, you have to take a look at your own. If you're going to take this on, you have to look at, you know, your time commitment. You got to do it. Okay. I mean, we agree that it's a really good thing to do, but we've also got to look at our own driving habits, right? Review those and say, wait a minute, I'm a role model here. So, and this gets back to what I said in the introduction, you know, as a result of, you know, going through this process or setting out on it, we might become better drivers as well. Mr. Smith, you want to comment on that?
I think it's a great point, Celeste. We all get into habits with our driving, and I think while they are observing us so intently while they're learning to drive, first of all, we've set a role model since the time they could watch us. And so they know whether we speed or use our turn signals or exhibit road rage. And I think when you're teaching your team to drive, you emphasize your strengths as a driver and you own up to your weaknesses and let your team know you want them to be better than you are in these areas. And it's not that hard to make small tweaks to our own behavior during that critical period, especially. We can stay within the speed limit, use the turn signals, be courteous, the kind of things that we want them to do. Small changes to our behavior, those have pretty big payoffs.
Yeah, and something that I thought was fun that you said that you say in the book is let them periodically get a shot at you.
I like that because kids get so much being talked to that I recommend what I call driving in their shoes, so that periodically during your training with the team, you get in the driver's seat, you have your teen assume your role, and have them make comments and take a few shots at you, because it'll make you a bit more humble, a bit more sensitive, and it'll also let you know that they're tuning in to what they should be tuning in, and we've probably got some things to improve on too.
Yeah. How about some advice for offering corrections and or constructive criticism?
Sergeant Emmer, why don't you try that?
Well, after reading your book, I thought to myself, you know what, there are things that I do in my car that not so much I yell at people, but I talk to myself, but so others can't see, that I told my daughter yesterday after reading part of that section to kind of look at what I do. I said, you know what, honey, what I like for you to do is for the next couple of months, I want you to see some of the things that I do so that when you get ready to drive, you'll have an idea of what to do. And if you see something I do wrong, let me know. And I'll tell you, you know, why I did it, or, you know, I'm sorry, honey, you shouldn't do that again. So when I read that and I told her that, she had a little smile on her face. She goes, really? Can I do that? I said, yeah, go ahead. So thank you so much, sir, for giving me that information. And it will help me when she gets to be 15 and 16 and learn how to drive. And the question is, now, what can we do? What are some of the things that we can do to discipline or to
correct, you know,
correct.
Say, let's review, or, you know, now why did you do that? I mean, but you can't be a distraction in the car as well. So, how do you handle that?
Well, I go back to the book, which was a very good book to read, too. You know, there are some things that I'm a very detailed type driver. With my wife, I've been married for 25 years, almost 26 years. I learn now that I'm a quiet driver with her, because once I started telling her, you know, you need to pull back far enough so that you can see, you know, pavement behind the tires, just in case that vehicle should stop in front of you or should break down, and she just looks at me and says, you want to drive? So I'm learning through the years that it's better to, if I see something happening at the time, how can I say to my child, you know, as we approach a intersection, what are some of the things you need to do, honey? In other words, put it on her. And if she has any questions about it, say, well, the better thing to do, in my experience, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong, is to start reducing your speed early, take your foot off the accelerator. Do you think that would work better? And again, the communication is the key to doing this and starting early, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because Timothy Smith got help on the book from a daughter, right?
I did. And fortunately or unfortunately, my daughter, Brittany, was a guinea pig during the writing of the book, because she was going through driver training as I was writing it, and I helped design the behind-the-wheel exercises with her in mind. So when I got, like, the third eye roll, I knew I better tweak that one. And I also learned that and every child is different. We all know how best to communicate with our kids, but I tend to be the kind of coach or person who finds the stuff that needs to be fixed, and I'm not as good at bringing out the good points and making sure for every constructive criticism I give on what went wrong that I make sure to say what went right. So she got defensive in the beginning. I mean, it's tough enough going through this without your dad writing a book about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got better at telling her consistently what she was doing well. So my emphasis to everybody, I think, would be make sure you give them good pats on the back because they're nervous, they want to please you, and you got to have both sides.
Yeah, and patience always.
Yes.
On both sides. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I just want to relate an incident that amused me. My daughter, who learned to drive in this country many, many years ago, and has been a sort of fleeing to the British Isles, made the comment about 3 years ago, "You Americans, you always use your turn signal to tell people what you've done after you've done it." And, of course, I have driven in Britain, and if you don't signal if you're going to pass a bicycle, you get horns blown at you. I think that's something that we really need to put more emphasis on. Tell them what you're going to do with enough time for it to be registered.
Yeah.
And that's my only comment. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Yeah, my pet peeve is tailgating. I don't know. You know, everybody's got something, I think, that just sort of sends you over the edge a little bit. Sergeant Emery is nodding his head.
Yeah. That's statistically the single biggest cause of road rage, tailgating. So let your kids know that statistically, if they want someone to be upset with them, tailgate. And if somebody's tailgating them, their goal is to get that tailgater in front of them because you're not going to change their mental attitude that day. Just get them in front of you. They're dangerous.
If they're in front of you, you're in total control.
Yeah.
If they start acting squirrely, you can adjust your speed accordingly. And if need be, it could be someone who is either DUI or just someone who is being reckless. You know, that's the time to contact the police.
Yeah. Now, is it me or are more and more drivers driving over the limit?
It is not you. In fact, police is now the big emphasis is speed because speed kills. It's a major factor in most fatalities, crashes. So what we're trying to do, what we're focused on doing from now until it is reduced, is focus on those who are speeding.
Hmm. Timothy Smith, you include an amazing table in your book, Crash Proof Your Kids, that illustrates, let's see if I can find it here, you've got the speed, time to travel 10 miles, time saved, risk of death.
It just opened my eyes because one of my driving weaknesses can be impatience as well. And it opened my eyes, the factors, and this is where statistics can be helpful. The death rate basically, I think, quintuples if you're about 20, 25 miles an hour over, say, 50 miles an hour. And you save, maybe 2-3 minutes. And with traffic the way it is today, speeding doesn't typically gain you much. So the reason most of us speed is because we're in a hurry, we're behind, we want to get wherever we're getting quicker. And for a teen to understand, look, you're not gaining that much time, and here's what happens to the risk of you dying at 10, 15, 20 miles an hour over the limit. That's one little data point that helps drive home the message. And it's a tough one because they get on the highway and they're dutifully doing 55 and it's like they're standing still. You know, they're being passed by left and right.
Yeah. 85 miles per hour, time saved in 10 miles, 4 minutes 57 seconds, however, risk of death 12 times.
Yeah, that's pretty eye-opening.
Yeah.
As state police, we're implementing different equipment for speed. In fact, that's why our motorcycle group is out there. In the state of Illinois, we have 42 motorcycle officers now that DOT provided for us. And their job is to get those who are exceeding the posted speed limit, the road rage, and they're more maneuverable to get to locations, and they can catch up to just about anything.
Hmm. And here's something I'd like both of you to address. What do we do? What do we tell our children if they are pulled over? How should they handle that situation?
If I can start, what I always tell people, number one, is if you see those red and blue lights behind you and the wig-wag lights, to check your speed, number one, because so many people say, well, I wasn't speeding. Well, how fast were you going? Well, I don't know. So check your speed. If you're going over the posted speed limit, that's one of the first questions I'm going to ask. You're to pull over as far right to off the roadway as possible. Many people pull right alongside the line on the interstate, and it's not safe for myself or for them. So pull as far off the roadway as possible. In fact, on the grass if possible. And I will position my car so that I won't get hit. Make sure, of course, you have your safety belt on because that is a law. Mm-hmm. Make sure your door is locked, especially at nighttime. If you're unsure who that person is, go to a well-lit, well-populated area, too, especially for females. There's been police impersonators. So go to somewhere where it's well-populated. It could be a grocery store, gas station, police department, fire department, hospital, someplace where there's others around. You're also going to, I'm going to ask for your driver's license and proof of insurance. So have those not go reaching for them at that time, because if I see any movement in the car, it's called furtive movement, that's going to put me at a heightened sense. You know, what are you reaching for? What are you grabbing down? So, you know, keep your hands on the steering wheel. I'll ask you for that information, then reach for them. Just have everybody in the vehicle have their hands where I can see them. And I always tell people, don't feel disrespected if I don't look in the eyes when I approach the car, because your eyes won't kill me. I'm looking at your hands. So make your hands where I can see them. And I normally will not have you get out of the car. And I say normally. I don't. It's for your safety and my safety, so I don't want you out of the car. Unless, of course, you're under the influence of alcohol or other drugs, or you're wanted, or there's a criminal charge. That's the only time I'm going to ask you to get into my car. Otherwise, I want you where I can see you and where it's safe for you also.
Timothy Smith, you want to comment?
Yeah, I think that's great advice from the perspective of the officers who are doing the pulling over. I think the advice from parents to kids in that situation, in addition to those great tips, are you zip your lip. You answer the questions, you provide the information, you treat the person with respect, because these are people who put their life on the line every day to keep you safe. So you don't argue, you don't dispute, you're pulled over for a reason, and you treat them with a whole lot of respect. And if you're honest, you're likely to get treated better if it's a gray area. If you're on the edge, you know, I think officers are people who appreciate candor, and that works. I think that works in your favor.
Yeah. Do most teens buckle up? Do most teen drivers now comply with that law?
Well, the law has changed so many times, and if you allow me, I'll tell you what the law states from birth on up. The law in Illinois states from birth up to age 3, a child must, not can or should, but must be in a child safety seat. From age 4 up to and including age 15, a child must, again, not can or should, they must be in either a child's safety seat or safety belt positioned anywhere in that vehicle. In other words, a 15-year-old in the back seat unrestrained is a primary stop for another reason than having an unrestrained 15-year-old in the vehicle. It is not a $55 safety belt ticket, but a $75 must appear in court for each child 15 or under unrestrained in that vehicle. If the driver is 17 years of age or under, everyone in their vehicle, 18 and under, must be in a properly adjusted safety belt. And again, that law just changed January 1st, 2006. Also, the primary safety belt law, which states everybody in the front seat must be in a properly adjusted safety belt. And some people put that shoulder belt under their arm or behind them. That is not a properly adjusted safety belt. And yes, you can be ticketed for that. And the new law that came out in 2004 was the booster seat law, which states a child over 40 pounds, under the age of 8, so 7 and under, over 40 pounds, must be in a booster seat. Now, a booster seat requires a lap and shoulder belt. Of course, the lap belt keeps you in the vehicle. The shoulder belt gives you upper body protection. So if all you have is lap belts in your vehicle, you cannot put a booster seat in there because you need upper body protection also.
Okay, let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign, line one. Hi.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to echo the previous caller's comment. I find police officers, state troopers, and throughout this country, I might add, because I travel for a living, they are very courteous. And if they, and I've been stopped, and I've been ticketed, but I've always been treated with respect. And it's how you as a driver respond to officers. They're out there trying to protect us. And the reason why I'm calling, just about a month and a half ago, I happened to be up on I-90, and I got a flat tire. It was late, very late at night. And I was over in the Gary, Indiana area, and I had an officer, an Indiana state trooper, who gave of himself totally in helping me change the tire on my automobile. So I have nothing but respect for those ladies and gentlemen that are out there on the road protecting us. And I want to thank you for have an opportunity to make that comment.
Well, I want to thank you, sir. Thank you for that compliment.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Speaking of, I want to, something that Sergeant Emery said earlier was, you know, if you got people in the car, it's important for everybody just to remain calm and zip the lip. Or was it Timothy Smith? Maybe that was Tim Smith's comment. But you know, that's so important, and I want Timothy Smith, I want you to comment on something that I think is very important that parents should be aware of. The more young people in the car, the greater the risk for something.
This was one of the most stunning statistics I uncovered in my research. For every teen passenger you add to a car driven by a teen, you increase the crash risk by 50%. Now, combine that with another eye-opener. Using a cell phone, making or taking a call while driving, is the equivalent on mental focus of a 0.08 blood alcohol level. So if you let your kids have teen passengers, everyone increases the risk by 50%. If you let them use cell phones, you might as well give them three beers. It's the same effect. These are easy things to restrict, particularly in that first 6 to 12 months of driving.
Yeah, and part of the problem, and this goes back to zip the lip, is that, you know, somebody will egg the driver on.
Yeah, it's tremendous peer pressure, and that's tough to resist. So the best way is to eliminate it to the degree you can, or at least reduce it.
Yeah. We're right here at the end of time. We've got one caller waiting. Let's go and take this call. Listener in Urbana, line one. Hi.
Hi, this will be a quick one. One, I took Sergeant Bill Emery's defensive driving class, and it's superb. I know you focused a lot on kids taking class, but as a senior citizen, it was a real eye-opener for me, and I think I'm a better driver because of it. But one thing he said really resonates with me because I do a lot of driving just back and forth across town to make appointments. If you leave late, you're going to arrive late. And just a tiny little thing like that, you know, really reminds me that, okay, I look at the clock, and if I'm leaving late, I'm not going to hurry across town. I'm going to be late. And it makes a difference in how much time I allow, and it makes a difference in how fast I drive. So thanks to Bill Emery.
Well, thanks for calling.
Thanks again. And it's so easy if you leave late to just place a phone call. Let them know that you're going to be a little late. That takes the pressure off of you and lets the person at your or the appointment know that, okay, they're going to be here. So it takes the worry off of them also. So, again, thank you for the call.
Or if you've got somebody in the house, you could say, would you please call them? Tell them I've just left the house.
Yes, there you
go. Very good. Well, I want to thank our guests very much for joining us this afternoon. Sergeant Emery, Safety Education Officer with the Illinois State Police, and on the phone with us this afternoon has been Timothy Smith, author of Crash Proof Your Kids, Make Your Teen a Safer, Smarter Driver. The book is available in paperback from Fireside. Tim Smith, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Celeste.
My pleasure.